So we are holding on Sagittarius Mid Bays, about halfway down the narrow lines, so about 15 lines from the top line begins Chinam. Still on the topic of the matter of She'ilu B'Bailim, what the Mishnah had told us based on the Pasuk, that if you borrow or rent something from someone else, or we said actually it applies to any of the Shomrim, and the owner is with you, when you mean that you've hired or borrowed the services of the owner, then you're pasur for anything that happens. And we discussed yesterday, we talked about the does that apply even to Pshia or not.
What are the conclusions?
So the conclusion, we said, there's a Machlokas, Ravina, and Rav Acha, and the usual rule, as the Gemara mentioned in a couple of places, is that the Halacha is always like the Mekel between the two of them. Usually it's Rav Acha who's the Machmir, and Ravina who's the Mekel, and the Halacha is like Ravina. In three cases, it's the other way around, and the Halacha is like Rav Acha, in those three cases.
In that,
So therefore, the Kula, therefore, is that even if he's Peshea, if it was Bevilim, he's still Potter. That's, related to of what we mentioned yesterday, what the Rebbe talked about in the Sicha, that the idea being that even if a person is a shoyl in Avoda, and even if he's Peshea, he'll have to do tshuva, but at least it accomplishes the fact that Ba'al of Imo, the fact that he feels that he's always being watched by Hashem, at least accomplishes he doesn't need to be Meshalim, he doesn't need to pay up right away. He can be given a break, so to speak, until he's able to do tshuva. Rav Hamnuna, Amar Rav Hamnuna, La'olam hu chayev, the shoyl or socher or what have you is always going to be chayev unless the only way to be potter with bevilim is as follows. Adshe potter v'chodesh ba, chamor v'chamer achareah. Number one, it has to be that the owner is actually working with the animal itself. So, for example, if you borrowed a cow, then the owner himself is doing the plowing. You borrowed or rented the cow, and you also borrowed or hired the owner of the cow himself to do the plowing for you.
Not enough that he's present.
Or, for example, if it's a donkey, that the owner of the donkey is actually leading it. And v'adshi yubayla mishas she'ela ad shas shvoru omeisa. Furthermore, Rav Hamnuna says the only way to be potter is if the owner is in your employment, either borrowed or for hire, from the time that it was borrowed, from the time the animal was borrowed, until the time it was broken or died or whatever oinus happened to it.
That what?
In other words, according to Rav Hamnuna, if you borrowed the animal, we know from the Mishnah if you borrowed the animal on Sunday and then you hired the owner on Monday, then we don't have the whole concept of all of him. But Rav Hamnuna is saying, even let's say for example, so you borrowed them both at the same time on Sunday. However, you only use the services of the owner of the animal on Sunday and Monday, and then that's it. Monday you didn't need him anymore, and so at the end of the day he left. And then Tuesday, while you still have the animal during the time that you still borrowed or rented the animal, an onus happens there. According to Rav Hamnuna, you would be chayav. Whereas according to what we were saying until now, you'd be positive.
Because
Baal Avima at the beginning, yeah. Alma Kasava, which means therefore we see from that Rav Hamnuna holds Ba'ol of Imay Akula Milta Mashma. Evidently then, Rav Hamnuna holds that when it says Ba'ol of Imay, it has to be about the entire process. Now remember, the pasuk starts off by saying like this: Chiyishal Ish Mi'imreihu, a person borrows from somebody else, V'nishbarei Meis, and the animal is broken or dies. Ba'ol of Imay Shalom Yishalom, Ba'ol of Imay Lo Yishalom. So Rav Hamnuna holds that the Ba'ol of Imay, the Ba'ol of Imay refers to both parts of the first part of the pasuk, both the v'chiyish alish, that you borrowed it, and the v'nishbarei meis, that it was broken or died. It has to be ba'ol of imoy for both of those things.
From the she'ila to the
from nishbar. The she'ila until the yeah. Masiv Rava. So Rava asks of a contradiction on that. A Bryce says, which we learned yesterday, shal of a shal ba'ol imoy, if you borrowed the animal and borrowed the services of the owner together with it, or sachar of a sachar ba'al ha'ima, or you rented the animal and you hired the services of the owner with it, sachar of a shal ba'al ha'ima, or you rented the animal and borrowed the owner together with it, shal of a sachar ba'al ha'ima, or you borrowed the animal and hired the owner together with it. So all those four permutations. And the key thing that we're bringing the Braise is it continues. Afa pisha bailam oisin malacha v'makam acha, even if the owners are working elsewhere, umesa, and it died, potter. What are you telling me, Rav Hamnuna? The owner has to actually be helping to plow or leading the animal or whatnot. When we say v'makam acha, my love v'malacha achar. L'chora, don't we mean the owner is working on some other malacha? You hired him you borrowed the cow, let's say, in order to do your plowing, and meanwhile you hired him in order to do some other work elsewhere in your field, let's say. In which case, that would contradict your Hamnuna. The answer is loy ba'oisa malacha. No, you could answer that, but makam acher means that he's still doing the same malacha. Ela my makam acher. So what do we mean a different place? To come rapi va'ozo kama. Suppose, for example, that the owner is helping by going ahead of the animal and digging it up a little bit in order to soften it so that the plowing can take place. Like this, for example, it may be very hard ground, Rashi says. So sometimes it might be so hard that it's too much of a strain on the animal and probably on the plow also to plow. You may end up breaking the plow, as we learned in a previous parak. So therefore, what you might have is you might hire or borrow the service of somebody else to prepare the ground to dig it up a little bit so it's not quite so hard. So when the cow comes by and then a minute later or whatever, it's already softened up a little bit. Maybe he's doing that. That would be considered b'makamacher. Because he's not literally on top of the animal, but nevertheless, he's there. Yeah, he's not far away either. Okay, the question is, on the face of it, though, since the Sefer, since the continuation of the Braisa, which we haven't quoted yet, we're going to quote it now, is necessarily talking about that the owner is literally al-gaba, is literally with the animal, Reisha b'malach acheres. It would seem that the Reisha of the same Braisa must be talking about where he's at a completely different job, and you're still potter. Dechatani Sefer, because the next part of the Braisa continues, shalav achachach shal ba'aleh, if you borrowed the animal and only then you borrowed the services of the owner, or sachar av achachach sachar ba'aleh, or you rented the animal and only afterward you hired the owner, af apish abaylam choshen agaba, even if the owner is actually plowing with the actual animal itself, so he's literally on top of the animal, right together with it, umesa, and the animal dies, nevertheless the shoyal or the sachar is chayim.
You could say the resha comes when it comes simultaneously, not necessarily in another place.
The point is, in other words, so we have like this. The Reisha didn't mention simultaneously or not. We know from the Mishnah that it simultaneously works.
Right.
But the first part of the Braisa mentions that even if the owner is working b'makam acher, you're potter.
Right.
The second part of the Braisa says that even if the owner is working literally together with the animal, you're chayav. So on the face of it, if the second part of the Braisa is talking about where he's literally working together with the animal, why would you think that the first part of the Braisa, by saying makam acher, means only that he's walking a few steps ahead of the animal and lechora, it would seem like it would mean anywhere else. Yeah. Amri, so the answer, Reisha v'Seifa ba'oisa malacha. No, because you could answer that both the Reisha and the Seifa of the Braisa are both talking about where he is involved in the same basic work, namely, in other words, there is a difference whether he's actually plowing with the animal at the same location, but there can be the difference whether he's helping the plow, like we said before, literally holding on to the plow and leading the animal, or, like we said, walking a few steps in front of the animal and softening up the dirt. There still could be a difference between those two. And so why would the Braisa have to tell us two cases? Therefore, what we would say is each part of the Braisa is teaching us a chiddush. Reisha Rabusa Kamash Rabusa means a chiddush. Reisha Rabusa Kamash Malon. So the Reisha would be telling us a chiddush as follows. The Afagav the Lava Agava, even if though the owner is not literally on top of the animal, he's some distance ahead, but he's some distance ahead. However, he is doing the same basic work. He is involved in that particular labor that's being done right now, because that's what Rav Amnona says you need. Nevertheless, since the Bailim were there at the time of the She'ela, and at the time of the Shavuot Omeisa, because he was in the same general vicinity, therefore Potter. The Sefer of Bosa Kamash Malon, and we would continue explaining the Braisa to make it work according to Rav Amnona. The second part of the Braisa where it mentions that he was working Al Gaba, what would be the Chiddush in it? The Afa Gabda Al Gaba, Kamash Malon, the Afa Gabda Al Gaba, that we would say even though he's literally on top of the animal, he's actually guiding it and whatever, and then Kivin to let have a Bible, Shas Shaila, since he was not employed at the time of the Shaila, Kayev. So you could argue that that's what the Braisa means. The Braisa does not mean to distinguish whether he's working here or working someplace else a half a mile away. It means whether he's working here literally on top of the animal or a few steps ahead of it. But the point would be, either way, there's not really a difference in halacha whether he's working with the actual animal itself or whether he's just working with the dirt a few steps in front of it. There's no difference between them. Each part of the Braisa mentions its own case in order to tell us a greater chiddush. that when you potter, you potter, even if he's going in front of the animal, and when you're chayev, namely when it wasn't sheila b'bailim, you're chayev even if he's actually working with the animal itself.
Couldn't you deduce one from the other?
No, because that's the thing. You would think, for example, maybe you would argue. Let's say, for example, if you only had the case where he's working with Gemakam Asim and a few steps ahead, you would argue, okay, so if he was hired at the same time as the animal, sure, you could say, you could say that working a few steps in front of the animal is good enough for us to consider it, there was the She'ilu B'Bailim to begin with, and there's now he's there B'Shas Shurudor basically, he's a few steps ahead, so fine. But you could argue, maybe even, okay, so you didn't borrow him at the same time, he's far, he's only a few steps in front of the animal, maybe, or the other way around, no, sorry, we would say the other way around. We would say that only in that case let me rephrase that. You would say, if you said that when he was hired at the same time as the animal, maybe you would think only when he's on top of the animal, when the Shavuot Omeis happens, only then is he chayev. You would think maybe if he's walking a few steps ahead and softening up the dirt, maybe that's not considered that he's there b'shas Shavuot Omeis, which according to the Hamnona, we need that also. Therefore, being told that not. And vice versa, if you have he was not hired at the same time as the animal, he was hired later, but Farti is working literally with the animal, he's actually guiding it, you would think maybe that's enough to posture him, no? So you could understand the Braisa that way and still have it fit with Rav Hamnona's opinion.
You need the two cases because we could think that you need two conditions to be hired.
We know you need two conditions, according to Rav Hamnona. You need that you borrowed him at the same time as the animal, and we know that he has to be there, b'shas Shavuot Omeis. But what does it mean, present? That's what we have to figure out. If we only had the one case, you would think, maybe in a case where you're going to make him potter, then he literally has to be on top of the animal, he actually has to be working with it, and if not,
right.
And vice versa. You would say maybe in the case where he's chayev, if he's actually on top of the animal, maybe he's not. Yeah.
You need it in two conditions. You know that he's chayev, but if you have one only, that's what it's
okay. The problem is with that is, how do you think to make such a comparison? How do you think to understand the braisa that way? If you're going to tell me the first part of the braisa is talking about that he's doing malacha achar, that's a completely different job, and the sefer is talking about where he's working on the same job, fine, you can say there's a chiddush. In the Reisha, even though he's working on a completely different job a mile away, nevertheless the shoyel is still potter because it was she'ilu b'bayis. Again, that would be if we say not like Rav Hamnona. That would be if it's enough for him to have been borrowed at the time together with the animal, and he's not there b'shas Shavuot Omeis. Eli, I'm a Reisha, a sefer, b'ayis malacha, my Rav Hamnona. But if you're going to say both the Reisha and the sefer are talking about he's doing the same malacha, then what's the chiddush?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I divide both malacha. Havi, the fact of the matter is, in both cases, he's working in the same work. Why would we think to say, after all, that there's a difference whether he's on top of the animal or whether he's a few steps ahead of it? Yeah.
Exactly. You could deduce this approach.
And furthermore, you have another question. Okay. So this second question that we're going to bring, at least Rashi says, this second question is not going to be to contradict Rav Hamnuna's idea about that the owner has to be working with the animal. That we're not going to have in the second braisa that we're going to quote now. However, we can see from this next braisa that we're going to quote that at least you don't have to have the owner there from Shas Shela until Shas Shavuot Omeis. It's good enough if he's there for Shas Shela. If he's employed, that's the point. We're trying to slog up Rav Hamnuna. Namely, that's the Gemara continues. Va'oid Tanya, and furthermore, we learn a braisa. Now, va'oid Tanya. Usually, when the Gemara says va'oid Tanya, it means not only we have a stira from the previous braisa. We said we have a further stira from another braisa. Here, according to Rashi, it means a little bit differently. It means, fine, leaving aside Rav Hamnuna, the first part of Rav Hamnuna's din, that the owner has to be working with the animal, fine. We dealt with, maybe you could answer the first braisa according to that. It would be a doichus, but at least you could say, fine, maybe the tana of the braisa felt there's some chiddush in it. But at least the second part of what he's saying, we can clearly show that there's a contradiction to it from another braisa. Namely, given that, now you have two back-to-back psukim, the first one says, the pasuk says, if the owner is not with him, then he has to pay, and then the pasuk continues, in the next pasuk, if the owner is with him, he does not have to pay. So the question is, why we need to say both? Mimashma shenemer.
If he's not there,
and the second one says if he is. Mimashma shenemer in ba'olav imi lo yishalem. Given that the pasuk says that if the owner is not there, and the second if he is there, rather the second pasuk that says if the owner is with him lo yishalem, he doesn't have to pay. And yideh shem ba'olav imi mashalem yishalem. Wouldn't we automatically understand that by implication, if the owner is not there, then he has to pay? So what do we need? The first pasuk that mentions the owner not being there, that is loy malach, to tell you as follows. If the owner is there, meaning in your employ, at the time of the she'ela, he does not need to be there at the time of Shavuot or Mesa. And on the other hand, if he was there at the time of Shavuot or Mesa, that's not good enough. Please close the door all the way. But that's not good enough. Sarech liyasim v'shas she'ela. He needs to actually be there at the time of she'ela. Now that contradicts Rav Hamnuna, because Rav Hamnuna is saying that you need both all the time. And according to this braisa, once you're there v'shas she'ela, that's good. But v'tanya idach. Further, we learn in yet another braisa. Mimash mashenem ba'olav ein imay shalom shalom ein yedeshi in ba'olav imay lo yishalom. You could do it the other way around also. If you have the first pasuk that says ba'olav ein imay, automatically you can infer from that if the owner is with him shalom shalom lo yishalom. So what is why do we need the second positive? So the previous price was going the other way around. We have the positive saying of the positive, we don't need the negative. Now we're going the other way around. If we have the negative, we don't need the positive. So what do we need that? Loy malach, to tell you, kivin shiyotza mirshus mashal shoa achas b'baylim, once it leaves the rishus of the one who lent it out for even a short time, b'baylim, when it was b'baylim, in other words, even if, so he borrowed the animal at 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, and at the same time he hired the owner to start working with him. 10 o'clock he dismisses him, or the guy quits, or whatever, it doesn't matter. Nevertheless, that shalach doesn't even literally mean 1 hour, it means even a short period of time. Umesa, and then later on it dies at some later date, potter. Kyuvta de Rav Hamnuna. That's a clear contradiction against Rav Hamnuna, because according to Rav Hamnuna, that wouldn't work. The owner would still have to be employed by you at the time of Shavuot Umesa. Kyuvta. Good. That's a contradiction, and therefore that's it. The halacha is not like Rav Hamnuna. The halacha is like these various brises that we've been saying. That as long as haya even b'shas she'ela, as long as the owner was employed by you at the time of the she'ela, then it doesn't matter where he was at the time. It doesn't matter where he was at the time of the Shavuot or Mesa, and further, it doesn't matter where he was physically, and it doesn't matter whether he's in your employ or not. So you don't need him to be in the same place, and you don't need him to be even still employed by you at the time of Shavuot or Mesa, as long as he was employed by you at the time of the Sheva.
Or before, yeah. Why do we give precedence to these other braises as opposed to...
Because Rav Hamnuna is an Amora. Rav Hamnuna is an Amora. If we find a braise that contradicts him, unless he can show that his opinion agrees with some other braise or some other Tana or whatever, then yeah, he's stuck.
Okay.
So
we discount completely...
So we discount, yeah. Not his braise, his member, his statement. Yeah. It's still part of Chochmas Torah, Tzara Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's still part of the Ebishtis Torah, but as a matter of halacha, we don't accept it. Okay. So now, if we look at the pasuk goes like the we said before that Rav Hamnuna had said that you need the owner to be present and in your employ. Mishas she'ela ad shas shavuot u'mesa. Why is that? Because the pasuk starts off like this. The pasuk says v'chiyishal ish me'imrei. We said because the pasuk says v'chiyishal ish me'imrei v'nishvarei meis ba'ol of eni mishalom mishalom. So he understood that the words ba'ol of eni mishalom mishalom refer back to the entire pasuk. Now, leaving aside, fine, we slogged up his opinion. The fact of the matter is, we do have, the pasuk says, v'chiyishalish me'im re'eu v'nishvar oimeis. There's a vav over there. So what are we doing with that vav? Now, we learned yesterday, we had the two opinions of Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan. When the Torah connects two things with a vav, is it and or is it or? So now, given that the halacha is not like Rav Hamnuna, and the fact of the matter is, you only need the owner to be present for one or the other of them, namely the she'ela. Well, we have to figure out how that works according to the two opinions. How does that work according to Rabbi Yoshia? How does that work according to Rabbi Yonasan? So, Abaya Savalaka Rabbi Yoshia. Abaya holds like the opinion of Rabbi Yoshia that says that vav would mean and therefore you need a special pasuk to tell you that it means or. And with Tarek the Kroik Rabbi Yoshia. And therefore he will have to explain the psukim in accordance with that opinion of Rabbi Yoshia. How we are going to get, given that the pasuk is saying v'nishbar oimeis, that nevertheless it's going to mean it's one or the other, that you're there only b'shas she'ela, and you don't have to be there b'shas shavuot oimeis. Rava Sava like Rabbi Yonasan, and Taras Lakroik Rabbi Yonasan. Rava holds like Rabbi Yonasan, that the Vav over there basically means or. And therefore, he will explain the Pesukim according to Rabbi Yonasan how we know that if it means one or the other. What? We'll have to see. Abaya Sava like Rabbi Yoshi or Taras Lakroik Rabbi Yoshi. He goes as follows. But all of any Mishalim Mishalim. When the if we only had the pasuk that said if the owner is not with him, then he has to pay time of the lessee b'tavayu. Based on those words, you would think that it means only if the owner was not present at either thing, not at the she'ela and not at the shvura or mesa.
At both,
you would think. Ha ise b'chadav lessee b'chadav pater. But it would seem if he's there at one and not at the other one, maybe you would be pater. But v'haksiv. In Ba'alav Imay Lo Yishalim, but on the other hand, the next pasuk continues, if the owner is there, is Imay, is with him, Lo Yishalim, then he doesn't have to pay, time into Issa B'Tavayu. And there, Ba'alav Imay sounds like it means if he's there throughout the whole thing, throughout the whole process, from the She'ela until the Shavuot or Mesa, then Lo Yishalim. It sounds like, based on that, if he was there only by one, by implication, if he was there only by one, you'd be chayav. How do we reconcile those two psukim? One which implies that only if the owner wasn't there at all during any of the process that you chayav, and the other, that only if he's there throughout the entire process that you potter. Loy maloch. That comes to teach you that you sort of split the difference. If he was there at the time of She'ela, then he does not need to be there at the time of Shavuot or Mesa. Oh, yeah, even B'Shas Shavuot or Mesa, it's certainly a similar B'Shas She'ela. But if he was there at the time of Shavuot or Mesa, he also has to have been over there at the time of She'ela. Meaning, in other words, where he is at the time of She'ela is the stronger thing. Now, after we finish, after we go through Rava's understanding of the Pesukim, then we're going to deal with why should we say that. If we have to say it's one or the other, what's the logic to say that it's more important that the owner is there at the time of She'ela, is in your employ at the time of She'ela, rather than at the time of Shavuot or Mesa? We'll get to that in a little bit. But first, let's deal with Rava, Savalak Rav Yonasan. Rava understands the Pesukim according to Rav Yonasan, or Matarath the Kroik Rav Yonasan. And therefore he explains, again, according to Rav Yonasan, when you have a Vav, it means or. So again, according to Abaya and according to Rav Yoshe, it means and. Therefore, we had when it said, Ba'olav Eni Mishalem Mishalem, again, it means if he's there, if he's not there at the time of the She'ela and at the time of the Shavuot or Mesa. On the other hand, in Ba'olav Eni Mishalem Mishalem, it sounds like if he's there, only if he's there at one and at the other. And we reconcile that by saying he has to be at one, but not the other. He has to be at the time of She'ela, and then whether he's there, Shavuot or Mesa, doesn't matter. Rava Savalak Rav Yonasan, Rava rather holds like Rav Yonasan, that the Vav means or. And he explains the Pesukim according to Rabbi Yonasan. Namely like this, Netanya. Rashi actually takes out the word Netanya because he says these aren't Braises, these are Abaya and Rava's own explanations of how Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshio would explain it respectively. The other, it's not actually Braises that they're quoting. It's their own statements. It's their own svaras of how they react. On the other, there are Rishonim who have the gears of the Tanya, and they say that these are respective brises that were known in the Bate Medrash, where one learned it one way and one learned the other way. And so Abaya and Rava explain respectively, you should know one of these brises goes according to Rav Yoshe, and the other one goes according to Rav Yonasan. Anyway, like this, in Ba'alav Imi Lo Yishalim, when it starts off by saying if the owner is with him, he is with him, meaning in his employ, he doesn't have to pay. Mashmed Isib Tavayu. Now it could mean that he's there for both. Right, umashma nami the chiyis bechadav, v'lasi bechadav pater. On the other hand, the vav again between the chiyish al ish and vinish barei meis can mean or. So therefore, it could also mean if he's there by one or the other, then he'd be pater. Uchtiv v'olav eni mishalem mishalem. On the other hand, the previous pasuk says that if the owner is not with him, shalem mishalem, then he has to pay. Mashma again, mashma v'lasi b'tavayu. Again, it could mean that he's not there at either one because the vav could mean and. On the other hand, could mean or, meaning if he's not there at one or the other, then he's chayav. Again, how do we reconcile those two implications of the psukim? Same idea. That if he's there at the one thing, the more important thing, she'ela, he does not have to be there at the time of Shavuot or Mesa. But if he's only there at the Shas Shavuot or Mesa, that's not good enough. Then he needs to be there at the time of she'ela. So he comes out with the same, but we're deriving it from the Pesukim in a different way. So yes, Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshi and Abaya and Rava will all agree with the same basic thing. They're all disagreeing with Rav Nuna, who said that it means and that it means he needs to be there at both. We shlug that up. But we slogged that up. So now they're all agreeing that it means they're all agreeing that in the end, in the final analysis, it means it needs to be one. It needs to be at sheva, but not at shvura or mesa. How we derive it from the psukim is that it depends on the two different ways of learning. And there's a bunch of different Rav Nunas in Shas. There's like at least three or four of them, so I don't know. Anyway, okay. So now the question becomes: so you're telling me, both according to Abaya and Rava's Shittas, you're telling me that the key thing is whether he's there. The key thing is whether he's there. B'shas Sheila. Why? Epochano. Why shouldn't we flip it around? Why shouldn't we say that Sheila is the less important thing, Shvuro Mesa is the more important thing? If he's in your employ, B'shas Shvuro Mesa, it doesn't matter where he was, B'shas Sheila. The answer is Mistabra Sheila. It's more logical to say that the Sheila is the more critical thing, Mishum to Kamaisi Lalu Shuste, because the Sheila is what brings it into his Rishus in the first place. So therefore, it's more logical to say that that's when the Chiyuvim takes effect. Okay, the question is, you could argue the other way around. Shvuro Mesa is a stronger thing because that's when he becomes chayiv in the oinus. When the animal is broken or died, that's when he becomes chayiv. Okay, my answer is back. So, Eloi Sheila, Shvuro Mesa, my oven. And if he hadn't borrowed the animal in the first place and then it got broken or died, he wouldn't be responsible. What makes it possible for him to be responsible in the first place is the Sheila.
Yeah, that's clear.
Okay, however, though, still, fine, you could argue the other way around. And if the animal hadn't had an owner, so you borrowed it, then you still, the responsibility, yeah, I mean, you need both, but why are you saying that one is stronger than the other? And the answer is, Sheila does have its trump card. Nevertheless, Sheila does have an advantage, even if you consider that, yes, you do need both in order to make him chayev, to have a case. Nevertheless, there is an advantage to Sheila. Shekin chayev b'mzoneseh. Because the moment he does the she'ela is when he becomes chayev in the mezonis of the animal. So therefore, in that sense, you can say that's the moment when a chiyuv on him is first triggered. So yes, the actual chiyuv for ein sim sure is only going to happen b'shas shvuro mesa. But already, as soon as he borrows the animal,
the
point is, once we have the she'ela is stronger in the sense that it already triggers a certain chiyuv on him, then we can say that's the critical thing as far as determining what's going to be the ultimate chiyuv if there's shvuro mesa.
Sure.
Now, of course, there is the point we learned in the Gemara yesterday that not necessarily when you're borrowing are you going to end up feeding the animal anyway. First of all, there could be a meadow nearby where it goes and grazes. It could be kalim where you don't. But still, there is the basic concept that a shoyl, there is the possibility that you become chayev in something right when you borrow it. And therefore, it's more logical.
You mean to imply that if he's chayev in his earnest, he's also chayev subsequently in earnest?
Well, we know he's chayev subsequently in earnest, but the point is, it's more logical to say that that's the critical point when we determine what his ultimate chiyuv is going to be for that earnest. At the time when the first chiyuv of mezonos is triggered is the same time when we're going to, on the basis of what's going on then, is what's going to be the story winning. Right.
In other words, we're saying that all the chiyuvim start at the time
of the sheila, right? Because yeah. So again, even if it's not something where you're actually chayiv in mezonos, but that is the time when you could be chayiv in mezonos if it's something that needs mezonos and where there's no meadow nearby. Rav Ashi Yomar. Rav Ashi says you don't need all of that. I have a different way of learning that from the lashon of the pasuk itself that the critical thing is the shas sheila. Omakro, because the pasuk starts off by saying v'chiyishalish me'imreehu, if a person borrows something from his friend. Now, from his friend implies that his friend stays over here, is stays at home, is not doing anything for him. Only the animal comes to him and starts working for him. Yeah. Implying not that the owner, not that his friend comes along with him.
May
imreehu. It comes from the place with his. Yeah. Not that his friend comes with him. And the pasuk continues. Shalom yishalom. You have to pay. Horeehu imay pasuk. Implying that if the friend is with him, if the friend comes along with him as part of the sheila or the schiros, then he's pasuk.
So then what do you need a pasuk for?
Then why does the pasuk need to spell out the case of Ba'al of Imo and Ba'al of Imo? The answer is, because if it were not for those psukim, you would have thought, okay, it's just the regular Lashon HaPasuk. It's just the regular way of phrasing that you borrowed from another year. You wouldn't realize the nuance that Ne'im Re'ehu means that the Re'ehu didn't come along with it as well. Once we have the all of Animoi, and therefore we need to understand when the Bailim are with him, working for him, and when they're not, then we can use the word Me'im Re'ehu to imply that the key thing was at the time of the she'ela, whether me'im re'ehu, whether re'ehu imoy at the time of the she'ela.
Because of
the psukim further, we can then deduce back that the me'im of me'im re'ehu is critical. Yeah.
Without them, you couldn't.
Without, yes, exactly. Okay. So maskana therefore is that we've established the basic parameters of she'ela b'bayalim there. Okay. Now let's get into some more detailed questions about this whole matter of she'ela b'bayalim. First of all, boy rami b'chama. Sha'ala the riva mashu. Oh, actually, I should mention there's actually a machlokus between the Rashi and the Rambam learn these first couple of questions that we're going to have over here of rami b'chamas. Rashi learns that they're not a question about she'ela b'bayalim, they're more general questions. These various kinds of cases that we are going to be talking about, that Rami Bahama is going to be asking about, are they considered she'ela at all? Are you even chayiv and oinsim for them? Or maybe not. Maybe they're a special kind of she'ela, and they don't follow the usual rules. The Rambam, on the other hand, learns that there's no question. Of course, they're a she'ela. You are borrowing them for a purpose, as we shall see. The question would be, does the concept of Baal Avim apply to them?
And what did he say?
That's what we're going to have to figure out.
The Rambam.
That's what the Rambam says. That all these, we're going to end up seeing that all in ourselves. But wait, yeah. Okay. So, Boy Rami Bahama, Sha'ala the Riva Mashu. What if a person borrows an animal in order to commit bestiality with it? To do an Aveda with it. Mahu, what would be the din? Again, according to Rashi, the question is Chayiv in the Oinsin, is it considered real She'ela or not? And according to the Rambam, the question is, if the owner was in your employ at the time, would you be potter if anything happened then on the grounds of She'ela B'bayalim? Do we say Kiddushayli Inchibayin, and you need it to be borrowed in the way that people normally borrow animals for normal kind of work? Well, L'Hochilei Shayli Inchi, people don't normally borrow animals for such a thing, especially the Gemara points out in some other places, it can harm the fertility of the animal, for either the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah, a goy usually wouldn't allow his animal to be used for such a thing because he doesn't want it. Yeah, so, okay. Or maybe you could argue the reason why you're chayev and oinsin as a shoyl is because you have hana, the fact that you borrowed the animal, you're able to use it for whatever you want. And this guy is getting hana, an improper hana, and hana that's also, but hana nonetheless. Another case, what if he borrows the animal just in order to show off? Meaning, Rashi says, he wants to appear richer than he is. So this way, for example, people will be more willing, storekeepers will be more willing to extend him credit, sell him things on credit, whatever. Yeah. So let's say he's borrowing it for that reason. Mamoina ba'in and v'hoika. Do we need that he borrowed something which has a monetary value? V'hoika. Well, the animal has a monetary value. Aduma mamoina de isle hana mine ba'inin. Or maybe it needs to be the kind of hana where he has hana from the kind of moment where he has a hanas moment from the animal itself, such as by using it for plowing. And here you don't have it because he's not actually getting any work out of the animal itself. So maybe it's not considered she'ela.
He's not working the animal.
He's not yet. Yeah, in this case, he's only using it to show off. As soon as he manages to establish a line of credit with somebody, he's going to return it. Yeah. Another case, sha'ala lasis ba'pachs mipruta ma'u. What if he borrowed the animal to do work with it, but less than a pruta's worth of work? So, mamoina be'inan ve'ika, do you need that he borrowed it in order to have a hanas moment? Well, you have a hanas moment. Fine, it's less than a pruta, but it's still moment. Oidoma ka'pachs mipruta la'ifumi. Or maybe less than a pruta is not really considered moment, and therefore it wouldn't be considered she'ela. Another case, shosh de paras vasas ben pruta mahu. What if you borrowed two cows together to do with them a pruta's worth of work? You know what? We had
cows to do.
You know what? We had similar questions in Kiddushin. But we had case in Kiddushin, a similar kind of thing. For example, you take a pruta on a Makadosh, two women. It was in today's Gimel Parakim of Rambam, actually.
How did it come to someone's sense that it costs more to rent an animal than to do
hypothetically, whatever, you know? And remember, which, you know, it also depends. I mean, let's say, for example, you know, it could happen that wages are really low, you know, during the Great Depression or whatever, everybody's out of work, so people will do work for next to nothing. A pruta then could be actually a substantial amount of worth of work. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. Me Amrin and Zilbat the Shoyal Mashal the Ika. So do we say you look at it from the point of view of the borrower and the lender? Well, there is a pruta's worth of work over here. Therefore it is a Shayla. Or Dilma Zilbat the Paris. Or maybe you look at it from the point of view of the animals. Each one, neither one has been borrowed. Neither one has been borrowed for a prutha's worth of work. So if in the previous case we said that a prutha, that less than a prutha, is not considered mamon, then it would be the same kind of thing over here.
If it's the animal.
Yep. Another case. Shal mishutkin v'nishalai echa man mahu. What happens? He borrowed a cow from two partners, and then one of them hired, and then one of them was willing to hire himself to be borrowed by you for work. So you have one of them working for you, but not the other. Mahu.
What about three?
Same difference. Kulay bala v'in and v'haleka. Do we say that you need
all of them?
Do we say that you need all the entire bailim, meaning all of them, to be hired out to him, valleka, and you don't have it? Or maybe at least you could say, fine, you can't argue, let's say, as far as Einsin or as far as She'elim bailim, you can't argue that he should be potter on the whole thing, granted, because sure, the other owner wasn't there, but maybe at least he should be potter from half. Tosis points out, you know, we had a case in Bava Kamma involving a similar kind of thing where you stole from two shutfin and then you were murdered to one of them, and we say you have to pay five chatzoy bakar or four chatzoy tzoyim, you pay five or four times half the value of the animal. The difference is Tosis says there, it's logical there. Look, you stole, you did the crime, you got to pay back four or five times, as the case may be. Here, the whole concept of Sheila B'Bailim is a chiddush. As we were discussing yesterday when we started the topic, it's really hard to understand, at least on a nigla level, what the whole idea of Sheila B'Bailim is anyway. So therefore, maybe there's less reason to say that it should go by halves, Tosfos says. We said that Sheila B'Bailim, it's a very hard concept to understand what the logic behind it is. Why does it matter whether you have the owner in your employ or not at the time when you borrowed the animal or rented it? Uh-huh. We mentioned the chinuch, we mentioned the Torah Tzmima, but it's a very hard svara to say. And therefore, you could say
Ein L'chaboyah. The one that gave the reason because he's there and he's got a on it.
Right, but it doesn't really work with the details that we've been learning so far. Yeah.
But a lot of equipment that you will rent, you will not be allowed to rent it without the owner or
that would be like Rav Hamnuna says, if the owner has to be there, Mishas Shelad Shas Sidro, so Shmuro Mei. We slogged him up, so that doesn't work. Halacha,
because
you
didn't follow the prices.
Okay. Yeah, but no.
That's a very good reason.
Okay.
Do you remember who asked those questions in Kiddushin about the Shabbat Prutha?
I think it was Rabbi Yirmiyah, but I don't remember.
Yeah, Rabbi Yirmiyah always asked.
It's Rabbi Yirmiyah.
The bird that lands.
Yeah. Okay. You know. Onward. Yeah. Okay. What about the other way around? Shutfin Shalu v'Nishal Echad Mehem Mahu. What happens if two partners together borrowed an animal and you were borrowed? You went to work for one of them. Same question. Kula shoyl be'in and v'leka. You need the entire shoyl to be working. You need the entire shoyl to have the owner working for him. Ba'al avim, right? V'leka, and you don't, because only one of the shutrim has him working for him. Ojumabahi paga de shayli mias mifter. Or again, maybe you could say the p'tur extends to half of it.
The Torah says ba'al avim.
Ba'al love, but Rashi mentions in a few places that it's a parasha Adonai Ha'aretz, for example. In general, in the Torah, any word that refers to mastery or possession or lordship or whatever is always in plural form, even if it's singular. So name Elakim, for example. But also, for example, Ba'al love Adonai Ha'aretz, you know, last week's parasha, for example, Dibroish Adonai Ha'aretz, you know, the brothers come and say to the Yaakov, the lord of the land came and spoke to us harshly. Adonai Ha'aretz, even though he's only one person. Because that's the style in Lashon Kodesh.
In English, it is also, except we don't have the word you as a plural, but the queen says we.
Okay, yeah. All right.
The queen didn't say it.
Yeah, okay, no, come on.
She didn't say it this year.
Come on.
Because she's not well,
no.
But she would have.
No. Okay.
If they were well.
Onward. No. Okay. Okay. Another case. Shalma isha v'nisha baila. What happens now, let's say, till now we were talking about regular partners. Now let's talk about a specific partnership, a husband and wife. You borrow a cow from a woman, and her husband goes and starts working for you as well, along with it. Or the other way around, Isha Shashal of Anishal Abal Mahu, or the other way around, if the woman borrowed the cow and you, the owner of the cow, went to go and volunteer and do work for her husband, Mahu, the question in those two cases is basically, Kinyan Pedis, Kinyan Aguk Domi Eloi. Do we say, remember we said, if we're talking about nichsim alug, which is what we're dealing with over here, you borrowed from the woman a nichsim alug cow. So the question is, the husband has kinyan peiros in it. He's entitled to the peiros of nichsim alug. That's the definition of them. Do we consider that it's kinyan aguf? Do we consider that that has the equivalent to, that has an equivalent to kinyan aguf? And therefore, we would say that yes. Therefore, in that sense, the cow belongs to him, or at least partially belongs to him. It might be then the same question as the shutfim, and therefore it would work as shayla v'bailim, or maybe not. Maybe he doesn't not consider to have any kinyan in the cow at all because all he has is peiros in him.
He owns the future peiros, or he owns the past peiros.
He has the right to all the payers, whether they came, whether they will come. Yeah.
Even though will come and have not come yet.
Yeah. I mean, Dabar Shalom Balaam, but it's a Kenyan for the sake of the payers. It's the equivalent of buying a tree where you're entitled to all the future produce that comes out of that tree.
When they come.
Yeah, okay. But nevertheless.
That's a big difference.
Okay, the point is he has Kenyan payers.
At that time,
he has the right to any payers that will come out of it. So therefore, yep. So is that considered like Kenyan Aguf or not? Okay. Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi. So far we've left all of these unresolved. We haven't answered any of these questions yet. We haven't found any.
We haven't gotten.
Now another one. Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi. How about another case? What if a person says to his shliach, I'm going to be lending out my cow to Pliny. I want you to go and lend yourself out and work for him as well. Mahu, what's the din? Is that shliach considered the equivalent of violence? Ba'al of mamash be'inav aleka. Does it literally need to be ba'al of imoy? And we don't have that. Maybe it can be considered the equivalent of ba'al. On those last two, as far as the Baal and as far as the Shliach, we do have an answer to them. The ones that we said up until now, the ones about L'Riva or L'Roisva or Pachos Mepruta, etc., we didn't have any basis for answering one way or the other. Those taka remain unresolved. And the halacha is, therefore, that says, as usual with cases of Teiku, basically, Hamoitzim Echaber Levanai. You're not going to be... We didn't say Teiku, but the Gemara doesn't always. But nevertheless, we didn't resolve them. And therefore, the halacha in all those cases, according to the Rambam, that all these questions were about Shayla v'Bailim, you're not going to be potter if the Bailim, even if Baal of Imai, because it may be that nevertheless you're still chayev. However, if you were Tophis, then yeah. Okay. So now, Amalei Rav Acha, Bredi Rav Ivya, Rav Ashi, Baal plugged the Rav Yechon and Rav Shlokish, Shliach plugged the Rav Yonis and Rav Yeshia. These last two cases that you were asking about the husband and wife, and about the person who was sent to shliach to be hired out on his behalf, those two depend on a respective machlokas, on a respective machlokas from previous generations. In the case of the husband, we can relate to a machlokas of Rabbi Yechon and Rav Shlokish, and therefore, once we know who the halacha is like in that one, we'll know what the halacha is in our case over here. And as far as the shliach, it's a machlokas. We have a machlokas between Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshia, which again, once we know who the halacha is like in that one, then we'll be able to relate it to you. Like this, Baal Pluk to Rabbi Yechon and Rav Shlokish is as follows. To Itmar, we have a discussion between them that goes like this. If a person sells his field to somebody else only for the payers, same kind of thing. In other words, that the lekeach will be able to enjoy the payers for a certain amount of time, and then it'll return to the original owner. It's similar to a mashkanta that we talked about back in Ezer Nesha, but it doesn't necessarily have to be tied.
Sell the field.
Sell the payers, right? Now what happens? The question is now as far as bikurim. When a person brings bikurim, normally he's supposed to, along with the bikurim, he's supposed to make a declaration, which is the beginning of Parshas Ki Tzavah. He got the ayam lasham alakecha, and then the couple of psukim that we say in the Haggadah, Rami Ovidavi, Vayereis and Amitrim, etc., etc. And a couple of psukim after that, the Afahine Hevesi, whatever. Five or six psukim, etc. Now, there are rules when there are rules when you can say those psukim and not. Among other things, is the psukim over there say the expression that I'm bringing the food of the land, Hashem nasata li Hashem. I'm bringing the food of the land which you, Hashem, have given me, implying that you have to have land that Hashem gave you. So therefore, the question becomes, in this case, this person bought the tzedakah for its payers. Is he able to make that declaration or not? Can it be considered he had a kinyan in that field or not?
To the parish.
We know he owns only the parish. Can it be considered the equivalent of a kinyan aguf, and therefore he has a certain ownership of the karka, or not? That is the machlokes. Hamoichas today machaver l'peir. Rav Yechanan Amar maybe b'koyer. Rav Yechanan says he is able to bring bikurim from it. He has mitzvah to bring bikurim from it, and he is able to save a stukim, because it can be considered that this is pre-hadama asher nasakali, because he has a certain ownership of the karka itself on the basis of the fact that he has the payers. Rish Lakish, maybe the ene kare, whereas Rish Lakish says, no, he can bring the bikurim, but he can't say the sukim, nate, because it's not kinyagot. Rav Yechon, maybe the kare, because kinyagot means he doesn't own the actual karka, all he owns is the payers. So Rabbi Yochanan, maybe the kore, because kinin peiros and kinin agufta. But Rish Lakish, maybe the ene kore, because kinin peiros lots of kinin agufta. So therefore, applying that to our case of the husband and the wife, the husband only owns the peiros of his wife's nechzimalur. He does not own the goof of them. The goof of them belongs to her. Therefore, if we say like Rabbi Yochanan, it means nevertheless he's considered to have kinin agufta in them. Therefore, we could consider it shelo v'bayalim. If we say that it's not kinyan aguf, then it's not shelo v'bayalim if he goes and hires himself out to the shoyal at the same time. Given in the end, the halacha is like Rish Lakish, and this is one of the rare cases in a machlokas of Yechon and Rish Lakish. This is one of the rare cases where the halacha is like Rish Lakish. The halacha is kinyan peiros is not kinyan aguf. Therefore, in the case of the husband and the wife, if you borrow from the wife and then the husband goes and hires himself out to you, it will not be considered shayla b'bailim, and you will be chayev in the usual things, gneva v'aveda, and if you're shayla. What about shliach? We said that we had the question, what about if you ask the shliach to go and hire himself out instead of you? To is that considered shayla b'bailim? That is close to Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshia. That depends on Machlokas of Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshia. The Tanya, as we learned this in Nedarim, if a husband is going to be away from home, let's say, for a while, so he has an apotropos who's in charge of running things in the household, dispersing money, and then so forth. So he tells this apotropos, kol nedarim shetei ishti nederes mikan ad sh'ovim makom pleni hofer lo. Any nedarim that my wife makes, we know the Torah says a husband can be made through his wife's nedarim on the day that he hears about them. So he says to this apotropos, any nedarim that my wife makes from now until I return from this and this place, hofer lo, you should cancel them for her. The hafer lo, and he goes ahead and does that. Yochol yu mufarim, you would think that's considered a valid hafara. Talmud Lema, no. Therefore, the pasuk says ishak yikimenu v'ishak yifegadu. Therefore, the pasuk says her husband is the one who establishes it as a valid neder by saying I approve of it or by not canceling it. The ishak yifegadu, and her husband is the one who can cancel it, meaning only the husband, not a shliach. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yonasan.
That may be very specific to.
We'll talk in a second what Tosis says about that. Rabbi Yonasan.
It's a very unusual case.
Rabbi Yonasan says, what are you talking about? Okay, it says Isha Yikimenu. So what? Shlucha Shalom Tumai says. It should be the same thing over here. And therefore, in other words, the same, applying that to our case of She'elu B'Bailim, same thing. Rabbi Yoshia would say it does not work. Rabbi Yonasan would say it works. Now, Tosfos asks what you're asking. Why don't we think that maybe that's specific to Nedarim? I mean, after all, Tosfos says, I mean, Rabbi Yoshia does agree that Shlucha Shalom Tamayseh, he just obviously says it's a Nedarim on principle, yes. But why, he says that obviously he has a reason to say it doesn't apply to Nedarim. Why should we think that whatever he says, why it doesn't apply to Nedarim, why should we think it doesn't apply to Shayla B'Bailim? Tosfos says like this, because when it comes to Hafaras Nedarim, what is Rabbi Yoshia quoting? He's saying the pasuk says, Ishak Yikimenu v'Ishak Yiferenu. The double expression, Ishak, her husband, means only him. It's come to be, if it only said Isha Yikmenu Yiferenu, fine, you could say her husband is supposed to do it, but if he's not available, Shlucha Shalom Tamayseh. The fact that it says it double, Rabbi Yeshia says, that means the Torah is telling us this is an exception to the rule of Shlucha Shalom Tamayseh. Well, when it comes to Shelu B'Bailim, also the Pasuk repeats the word Ba'olav twice. Ba'al of Eini Meshalem Meshalem in Ba'al of Eimer Lo Yeshalem. So again, you have twice Ba'al of, which again, Rabbi Yoshiya would say, therefore, that means only Ba'al of, nobody else. Rabbi Anderson would disagree, just as he disagrees by Nadar.
Without any reason.
Well, he doesn't have to give a reason. He says, okay, so it says it twice. Still, there's not enough reason to cancel the concept of Shalom Shalom.
But he would have said it for the Isha.
No, he would say by the Isha also. Rabbi Anderson says, Matsunim Bechomachim, Shalom Shalom Kamosei. And therefore, he holds it does work by the Isha. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, so that, and again, since the halacha is like a Yoshia, that does not work, and a patruch cannot be made for Nadarim for you, as we learned in Nadarim. Same thing then, and a shliach cannot serve as Baal of Iman.
Do we see other cases here too?
Yeah, here too, we wouldn't write.
Do we see other cases that do not that do apply from shliach to apotropos, and from apotropos to shliach?
No, an apotropos is basically just another form of shliach, so it's not there. But now, actually, we're going to talk about a specific kind of shliach. Wait, we're going to see in a second. But by the way, there are other rishonim who learn a little bit differently than Tosfos. It's not so much the fact that it said twice isha or baal of, as the case may be. It's just even the fact that it said it once. Isha implies only her husband, nobody else. Baal of implies only the baal, nobody else. Yeah. I'm a little ilish l'rava. How about another possibility? What if instead of a shliach, what if he asked you Eved to go and be borrowed to do work together with the parah? Mahu, what would be the deal? Tiboy lamandam a shalom kamose, tiboy lamandam a shlocha shalom ene kamose. And you can ask it according to both possibilities, whether we say that shlocha shalom kamose, and that we apply that even in this case, or according to the possibility that we don't say that, or that we say it in general, but we don't say it in this case. Namely, because you could argue hanim the shliach the bar mitzvah. This Gemara is where we get the term bar mitzvah. Although here the Gemara doesn't mean, well, here the Gemara is not using bar mitzvah in the sense of a boy who's 13 years old. It means literally whatever bar mitzvah is, somebody who is shayach to mitzvah, somebody who is obligated in mitzvah, as opposed to an Eved. That's how the word bar mitzvah comes to mean a 13-year-old boy, because he's chayav in mitzvah.
Right.
But that, in our Gemara, we're not talking in terms of age, which we're not talking in terms of age, we're talking in terms of chiyuv and mitzvah from a different point of view, whether he's an Eved or a ben chori. So you could argue, if you say shlocha shalom kamosai hanimi l'shliach the bar mitzvah, you could argue that only applies to a shliach who is subject to mitzvah. Avol eved the lav bar mitzvah, but an eved who is not subject to mitzvah, he's subject to some mitzvahs, but not all of them, like, maybe not. So therefore, you could argue, even if you say shlocha shalom kamosai, maybe an eved is not included in that. Or you could argue the other way around. Even if we say that normally shlocha shalom is not kamosei when it comes to this din of baal of imay, hanimi l'shliach, that would only be a shliach who has no particular relationship to you. Avol eved, yad eved, kirad, piyad rabbe damya. The yad of your eved is exactly like your own yad, therefore maybe he can be considered an extension of you. You, it would be shelo v'ilam, so would it be with him. By the way, Rishonim asked the question, we're mentioning the question of whether the shliach is a bar mitzvah or not. Why would we think that makes a difference as far as the din of Baal of Imai? And the fact of the matter is, we find that an Eved can be used as a shliach for certain things. For example, you can have your Eved separate Truma on your behalf. He's considered in the rule of Asem Gam Asem that we said before, Ma Asem B'nei Bris, Ashlochakan B'nei Bris, that we learned earlier in Ezo Neshech, even though he's not fully chayiv in mitzvah, because he is chayiv in the mitzvah of Truma. Why don't we say the same thing over here? So they give a couple of different answers. One interesting one being an Eved. When do we say an Eved can be shliach? Is only to mitzvah that he has a shaychus to. We learned, for example, in Masechta Gittin, that an Eved cannot be used as a shliach for kiddushin or for gerushin because he's not mitorah gittin the kiddushin. He's not shaykh to those mitzvahs at all. An Eved is not subject to the mitzvahs of Jewish marriage and Jewish divorce. So the logic is over here then, since an Eved also doesn't have any nechasim, it says, Mashakana Eved Kana Rabbi, therefore it can be argued that he doesn't have a shaychus to the dinim of Baal of Ima. That's one of the answers that they give. Okay.
And that's their offer?
No, they said, well, Omalei. So Rav Ilish had asked this to Rava. Rava answers, Mistabra, Yad Eved Ki Yad Rabbi Damya. Yeah, it's logical to say that that an Eved Yad is considered like the Yad of his master, and therefore, yes, if you were to tell your Eved to go and volunteer to do work together with the Parah, yes, it would be considered Sheila B'Bayim.
It would be possible.
And it would be possible. So far what we have from all the questions that we had thus far is the first couple of questions that Rami Bar Chama asked about the Riva and the Roisva and Pachas Meprutah, etc., we left unresolved. The ones about Baal and about Shliach we resolved based on other machlokas, and we said by a Baal it's not and by a Shliach it's not. However, an Eved is an exception to the usual rule of a Shliach. An Eved, you have the Eved hired out or borrowed out together with the Para, yes, that will be considered Shela B'Bayim.
With the acceptance of the Baal.
If the Baal says to the Eved, go out and then work together. Okay. Another question. When a husband is using the chosim of his wife, is he considered a shoyl or is he considered a seicher?
It depends on the previous machlokes.
No. This is a new topic. We're not talking about shayla b'bayim. We're talking about, Robert can answer back at this shayla b'bayim. Rami Bar Chama, on the face of it, is asking the question, look, in general, if a wife has a cow of nichsim alug, and the husband goes and uses it, what is he considered during the time he's using it? What kind of chiyuv does he have? The chiyuv of a shoyl, where he's chayav for everything, or the chiyuv of a seicher, where he potter for anything?
Like we said previously,
somebody else, a third party, borrowed it from the wife, and the husband goes along and hires himself out to the same guy at the same time. Now we're talking a different case. There's no third party.
He just uses it from the wife.
Yeah, his wife has a cow. He himself is using it, the cow or whatever. During that time, he's using it. Is he a shoyl or a seicher?
It's nichse malu.
Yeah.
It couldn't be sown,
of course. Then he has full ownership of it. Yeah. Amar Rava l'fum churfa shabeshta. The Rava says, in accordance with Rami Bar Chama is so sharp that he made a mistake. In other words, he's good at coming up with great questions, but he didn't consider in this case that the premise of his question, there's a basic flaw in it. Manafshech. Because no matter how you look at it, is shoyl havi she'elu b'bayim? Fine, you're going to say he's a shoyl. It's still she'elu b'bayim. His wife is still working for him all the time. She's meshubad to him in the various things that we learned about in Sukkos, and therefore he'd be potter regardless. He's soicher havi schiras b'bayim. And fine, you consider him a soicher. Fine, his wife's not chayav for anything. Same thing, schiras b'bayim. So either way, it doesn't matter whether you consider him a shoyl or a soicher. It's b'bayim. Yeah, that's the point. Rabbi is saying Rami Bar Chama is so sharp at coming up with questions, but here he made a mistake and didn't even realize that his question doesn't really have a good basis. No, so you can't say that that was what the question, you can't say that that was what Rami Bar Chama meant to ask. El, ki kame boila le Rami Bar Chama. No, we have to say the question that Rami Bar Chama had, he didn't phrase it properly, but he meant like this. Let's say, for example, first he rented a cow from her, later on he married her. Now we can ask, shoyel havi or secher havi? Now, at this point, after he marries her, is he considered, at that point, a shoyl or a seicher? Shoyl havi, do we say that he is considered, at this point, a shoyl? So what happens like this? He rented the cow from her originally. Now, without being married. Now, if we say that he becomes a shoyl, if we say that after they're married, he becomes a shoyl, that because he's using it for free, after all,
before
he was a seicher, he was paying her for it. Now he's not paying for it anymore. Maybe what we have is a new deal where now he's considered a shoyl. So now this new status of shoyl overrides the old status of seicher. Therefore, we have, in other words, the old schirus is over and done with. It's as if he returned it at that point and now he borrowed it again. Well, then he's a shoyl b'bayim. He's potter. A seicher havi, a seicher havi, or maybe you can say he's considered a seicher. In the sense that he has obligations to her also. For example, the Meiri points out, we have, for example, we learned in Subas, he has the obligation, for example, to pay money to get her released from jail or captivity or whatever. He has he has to pay money for her doctor bills and stuff. The point is, maybe in that sense, he can be considered a seicher. There is still something that he's paying.
We learned
in Ksubas that why is he entitled to pay this from her? That's the point why the Meiri is bringing in the thing about redeeming her. Because we learned why did the Chachamim make the Takana that he's entitled to pay this from her Nichsim Alog? Is because in return for that, he will free her from, he will free her from captivity if she gets captured. Well, therefore, in that sense, he can be considered a soicher. He's renting it. There is a potential rental payment involved. Hmm. And therefore,
why does he have to pay the money?
What?
He doesn't have to pay the money.
No, what he paid. What he paid. But the point is, maybe let's say that she waived that. He doesn't say that anymore. But still, there is in that sense a schirus. So therefore, maybe he's a soicher avi or schirus to the kidakaima kaima. And therefore, a new status of soicher cannot override an old status of soicher. It's the same status after all. So all it is a continuation. We consider before he owed her X amount for the schirus. Now, instead of paying her that amount, it's like it's a pending thing. In case you ever get captured, then I have the responsibility to redeem you, and therefore, we would say.
What about Sheikh Tzadzain?
What about it? That's not related to.
Why is that not being brought up in?
Because those have nothing to do with his she'elah or his skirt. Those are separate obligations that have nothing to do with him using her nixim alur.
Okay. Why?
Because they don't.
No, but why does it have? Why is it he's going to pay for her to get out of?
Because that's a special takana of the Chachamim. We learned in Ksubas that the Chachamim made there's four different things that husband is entitled to for her. Fine, but the point still remains.
You say this payment is.
No, he's entitled to use her nixim alug. Why did the Chachamim allow him to use her nixim alug and get paid for them is because the quid pro quo is that if nishbeis, then he has to redeem.
Yeah.
And therefore he still considered the same old soicher. When he first borrowed it wasn't schirus b'bayilim because she wasn't working for him. So even now that she is, as we learned before, that's not enough to make it schirus b'bayilim. Therefore, he'd be chayav. So therefore, we could say that's Rami Bachama's question. And that if therefore it becomes relevant to know whether he's a shoyl or a soicher. The problem with that is the Gemara says no. Because so what's the logic? You're saying if he becomes a shoyl, then the new status of shoyl overrides the old status of schirus, and therefore now he's a shoyl b'bayilim, where before he was a soicher shalei b'bayilim, by the same logic. Is soicher nami havi? Fine. Let's say you say the husband is now a soicher. It should be considered a new schirus. Still, the new status of socher, he's now being sochered on a different basis. On the basis of pidyon, because now they're husband and wife. Right. Therefore, that should override the original schirus. Right. So, right there, what's the point of Rami Bahama's question? And now Tosus points out the Gemara might have thought to say, but the Gemara evidently didn't consider it a valid point to say. We could argue maybe Socher can override Shoyo, maybe Shoyo can override Socher because it involves more chiyuvim. Shoyo is chayv and onsin, a Socher is not. But the Gemara didn't consider that a valid
point. If you say for one, you should say for the other.
No, so we can't say that was Rami Bahama's question. Ella, keep coming boiler, Rami Bahama. No, we have to say rather that Rami Bahama's question was in the following case. Going to Ugri Parame Alma, suppose that she borrowed a cow from some third party, Bahadur Nasva, and later on now her husband married. Now, we learned
after she had
borrowed the cow. Now, the question is like this. We learned back in Hamaskid. We learned back in a Maskid that you had the case, let's say, that Reuven borrows, what was the case over there? Shimon rents a cow from Reuven, then he lends it with Reuven's permission, as we said over there, to Levi. Then it dies. Now, Shimon being a soicher is potter from Oinsin, so does it dying. Levi being a shoyl is chayev. So we said, what happens? We said over there that Levi for sure has to pay, no question about it, but who does he pay? We said, according to the Tanakhama over there, we said he pays Shimon. What he does is, the Shimon has to swear that it was Mesa Kedavka, that it wasn't Oinus, because otherwise he himself is going to be Chayev. And then Levi, the Shoyl, will pay him. And Reb Yossi disagreed. The Karen. Reb Yossi said, what are you talking about? Case of Allah, he's a scholar before Rosh Hashanah. What are you doing business with somebody else's cow? The cow, of course, belongs to Reuven. What are you, Shimon, doing collecting the money of it from Levi? Therefore, he said, pass the parallel by the Marashonim. The value of the cow has to be paid from Levi back to Reuven. Yes, Shimon is potter from paying because he swore, but nevertheless, the value of it is going to go from Levi to Reuven.
Directly.
So now we can now we can discuss a similar point over here. We passed him in the end. The halacha was like Rabbi Yehuda.
That
passed the parallel by the murder shrine.
It does go back.
It does go back. Yeah.
I just said that it doesn't.
That's the chachamim over there. So this is one of the rare cases where the halacha is like an individual tana against the tana kama. Okay. Anyway, so Vavli v'drabbanon da'amri shoyo mashalom l'socher. Now, so again, the situation we have over here is that she borrowed the cow. He later, from some third party. Now her husband, now this guy married her. Now, having married her, he now has the ability to use that para, because it effectively becomes, in a certain sense, part of nichsim alug, and therefore he has rights there. Rabbi Akiva Eger asks on that actually lechora, based on some stuff that we learned in Ksubas, he shouldn't have the ability to. But okay, let's say according to Rashi that he does. So now,
Tosfos doesn't
discuss it. Okay. But now the question becomes like this: Vavli b'drabbanon da'amri shoyol mashalom l'socher. So according to the Rabbanon in that Mishnah over there, who said that the shoyol, that Levi is going to pay the socher Shimon loyti boiloch, then you have no question. Devada sheila b'baylami. Obviously, then in this case, it will be considered sheila b'baylim, because what happens then again? She
has to pay her.
He has to pay her. So because what happens again? Here you have exactly the same scenario. She is standing in the place of Shimon. She rented a cow from Reuben. Levi married her. Levi is borrowing the cow from her, and we're saying tax the part of the Bible. If we say no, if we don't say tax the part of the Bible, Mershenim. If we say Asher Meshalom L'Socher, it means he would have to pay his wife, but it's Shelem L'Bailim because his wife is under contract to him as part of the marriage. So then, obviously, we would say that. So then, obviously, we would say that it's Shelem L'Bailim. The question, rather, that Rami Bachomer is asking is, if we look at it from the point of Yosi, who says that in this case, the husband is going to have to pay the original owner of the cow, rather than his wife, the master. Now we can ask Mai. So now we can ask, what's the husband's level of responsibility? And therefore, that becomes an important point. The answer is, the actual answer is that the husband is not considered either a shoyl or a socher when it comes to nichsim alug, el a lekeach habi. Rather, he's considered to be a lekeach. It's considered as if he bought that cow, and therefore he's potter. Just like any case.
Why
is he considered a lekeach? Based on what Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina said, the Amr Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina, we learned this earlier as well, also in Hamaskid, we also learned it in a few places before that. But Usha Hiskinu, the Chachamim made a takana in Ur. There was one of the famous takanas Usha, during the time when the Sanhedrin was located there. They made a takana. Ha'isha Shemakra b'nichsam alug b'chaya b'ayla, that if a woman sells some of her nichsam alug while her husband is alive, umesa, and later on she dies, habal moti miyad alakuchas, the husband is able to take away those nichsam alug from the owners, from the buyers, because she wasn't able to sell it in the first place. He is considered the lakei aparishin. He's considered the first buyer. So therefore, his rights there preempt theirs.
The same logic over here, therefore,
is that he's considered a lekeach. Well, as a lekeach, fine. He bought the cow. He bought the cow from her. So fine, then. In that case, if anything happens, it's considered that she sold him the cow. Yeah. So therefore, if anything happens, he's potter.
Even verbally, without a
doesn't matter.
Star or anything,
yeah, it doesn't matter. You don't need a shy for selling the cow to him anyway. It's interesting now that you mention it. I mean, Al Tadeva mentions after saying the Mechiras Chomet in the back of the Shulchan Aruch, after that, the Al Tadeva deals briefly with the question of Mechiras Behema Makeres, the dinim of selling part of a pregnant animal that's about to give birth, and the baby is going to be a Bechur, and nowadays, when there's no Beis Mikdash, taking care of a Bechur is a hassle, so you want to sell it ahead of time to a Goy. So Al Tadeva deals in brief with the whole matter of how you do it, kedat to kedin, so it should be valid up the Allah. Now, as I never mentioned, the Sefer Dvarim over there, that there's no need to write a shtar for it, unlike the Mechiras Chomet, because he says in Goyish law, when it comes to selling things like mashke, you're supposed to write a contract. When you're selling things like a cow, you don't write a contract.
So mashke is important.
Mashke is important. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
So she has to pay
about? So the pastor, she would have to pay, yeah. The pastor, she would have to pay. But yeah, the husband is about to. Okay. Another question. What are you talking about Chomet? If a husband is using the nechassim of his wife, again nechassim alug, and meila is committed, mi ma'al. So who is the one who's actually chayav meila? What's the situation? Rashi says like this. Let's say, for example, sometime after she got married, she inherited nechasim from her father or whatever relative. Among it was money of Hekdesh. They didn't know that it was Hekdesh. Now, he becomes a shliach. He becomes a shliach who's now using, who ends up using nechasim Hekdesh. So the question is, when this money is spent, who has committed me'ila?
Yeah.
Well, let's figure out. Amar Rava man limo. So Rava asks, who do you think should be the one who committed me'ila? You have three different parties involved over here. You have the husband, you have the wife, and you have the chachamim who made the takana that he has the right, that he has rights to. So limo baal, should we say that the husband is the one who committed me'ila? Because automatically, Rashi says, we would consider that she wasn't involved. As soon as she inherited it, automatically it becomes in his rishos. The problem with that is, you can't say that he's moyo. He never had in mind to be koina any part of it which is author. He only meant to be koina the part which is mutter. Therefore, how can you say that he will have committed me'ila? Yeah. In other words, the classic case in me'ila, b'shogig, is you didn't know it was money of Hekdesh, fine, but you did intend to acquire it. Here, whatever part of it is Hekdesh, he never intended to acquire in the first place. Kimel Ihi, should we say that she's the one who's moil? Same problem. She doesn't want to be machna to her husband. She doesn't even want to be machna to her husband. That's mutter. If she had her way about it, she wouldn't be machna any of it to her husband. She has no choice. That kind of chachamim is that nichsimalug goes. The husband has rights to the payment. If she had her druthers about it, she'd keep all of it for herself. So you can't say that she means to be machne, the part that's also to her husband. Yeah.
That's why it's also different.
Yeah, right. Pashtus, I guess, by the second one, it would have to be the lakmi, I guess. I don't know. Okay. Nimalu Bastin, should we say that the local Bastin, who are the ones who arrange the distribution of the Nechasim and the ones who make the Takanas or whatever, should we say that they're the ones who committed Me'ila? When the Rabbanan Lachatchila made this Takana, the Omru Baal Lekeach Abi, that they said the Takanas Usha, that the husband is considered a Lekeach, they only did it as far as things that are Mutter. Again, the Rabbanan would have never made the takana that he should be kona the nichse hekdesh, and that they should be. And remember, the point is what we're saying is me'ila would be committed when nechasim are transferred from the hekdesh to the ownership of cholin. The Rabbanan were saying would never have made the takana. They would say whatever is hekdesh has to remain hekdesh. It shouldn't go into her rishos. It shouldn't go into his rishos.
In other words, the takana doesn't apply to hekdesh.
Yeah. So it doesn't work. Ella Amar Rava. No, so Rava says rather the jinn will be Baal Mal Lichshayotzi. No, it's true. At the time when the Yerusha takes place and when the husband is entitled to it under the rules of Nichsimalur, at that point Takano Me'ila has been committed yet, because we just said none of the three parties that are involved can possibly have been doing it and having in mind Me'ila. However, when the husband ends up spending that money, which then he's actually taking it out of the the Rishus of Hekdesh and bringing it into the Rishus of Kulin by spending it on something, that's when Ma'al, Lichshayotzi, when he spends it. Because it's exactly the same kind of thing as what happens when you spend, the regular case where you spend money of Hekdesh on something Kulin, where at that point you committed Me'ila, even though you didn't know it was money of Hekdesh. Fine, the same thing over here. The fact is, at this point, he physically took the money biyad and gave it to a storekeeper or what have you. At that point, Me'ila has been committed, and he's the one who would be chayav to koyv Me'ila.
And if she doesn't, she's doing it.
And if she, yeah, well, we're talking about him, because he's the one who's entitled to use them as nechasim alone. Yeah.
So what difference does it make?
Well, the point is, he's going to be the one who's chayav to koyv Me'ila. He's the one who's going to be chayav to keren b'chaymesh and the osham. Okay. Now, new topic. We dealt with all this time. We dealt with the basic chiyuvim of shomrim. We talked about she'ela b'bailim and all the various permutations of that, which we've just talked about the last amud. Now we know that there is. So now let's start talking about another thing. When a shoyel or a soicher has something, so we know we've established a shoyel of chayev for gneva, aveda, onsin, everything. A soicher, we said, we had machlokas. Is he like a shemah chinam or like a shemah socher? The halacha is like a he's a shemah socher. He's chayiv in gnei v'aveda potim from einsim. What happens now if something a shoyl and a socher have something unique among the shomerim, namely if they're allowed to use the thing, a shemah chinam and a shemah socher are. Therefore, you can ask what happens if the thing gets damaged because of them using it. What would be the din then? So, iboyl. Kochash basa machmas malacha mai. What happens if the animal's flesh was weakened? In other words, its muscles got weaker. It lost bulk because of malacha. Mai, what's the din? Are you chayev to make up that amount or not? Amalei Ahura Mirabbanan, Rav Chilkiya Breder of Ivya Shmei. So one of the Rabbanan, named Rav Chilkiya Bar Ivya, said Breder of Ivya, said, what are you asking? The Klal Dimei Sabachas Malacha Mechayev. So what are you implying? You're asking if the animal got weak because of work. You're asking whether you're chayev, which implies, therefore, that you seem to understand if it died, Machmas Malacha, you would for sure be chayev. And the only question is, what happens if it didn't die, it just got weaker? Why should you be chayev for Beis Machmas Malacha either? Neymar, why shouldn't the shoyel or the soicher be able to say, Lavla ukma b'kilta shilta? Look, I didn't borrow the animal to put it in a display case. I borrowed the animal or rented it in order to work with it.
Necessarily.
If it happens, b'kilta, Rashi says, by the way, means killer, not in a display case. We leave it like whatever, in a canopy bed, whatever. Yeah, the point is that it's meant to be worked with. So therefore, if it's meis machnas malacha, why are you making me chayev? I used it completely in a normal way. It died. You can't hold me responsible for that. Ella, Omar Rava, so no. Rava says, rather, we have to say like this. Needless to say, if it only became weak because of the malacha, sure, you're potter. Ella, feel amazed, machmas malacha, nami potter. Yeah, similar to what Rav Chilkiya is saying, that yes, even if it died, machmas malacha, you're also potter. Because again, he can say, I didn't borrow it to put it in a canopy bed. I borrowed it in order to use it. Now, Mepharshim asked the question, so why should we say, what's the logic that we're saying he's chayav in Einstein, but he's potter in Mesa Machmas Malacha? What's the logic? So the logic is, they say, one explanation they say is like this. We talked about earlier the concept that a shoyl, that any of the Avar Shoyim are able to make a tznai, that I'm going to be potter from something that normally I would be chayav in, and if they didn't make such a tznai, the implication is they're accepting on themselves this kind of thing.
Right.
Oinsin, granted, oinsin are not common. Now, oinsin are not common by definition. Fine, because they're oinsin. On the other hand, they are something which could be reasonably accepted and something which, therefore, if the guy wanted to be potter from oinsin, he should have said, you know, there is the possibility of onus, there is the possibility to break a leg or die or what have you. I want to be potter from that. If he doesn't say that, implies he's chayav. Meis machmas malacha is something so completely out of left field, you can't even expect that he would have even more than oinsin, because normally you borrow an animal, it's a healthy animal, it's able to do the work, if it wasn't, it's your fault. What did you lend me a defective animal in the first place, or rent me a defective animal in the first place? Therefore, there's more reason to say that meis machmas malacha, you should be potter, even more so than oinsin.
Like when you rent the car, you expect it to work.
Right.
But you'd be less surprised if, you know, something hit like a rock or a stone hit it or something. That would be less of a...
So, in terms of rent or cars,
that proved that he was, you know, feeding and making a kind of drink and using it in a normal condition.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has to prove it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're going to see, actually. But you're talking about rental cars. Yeah, it's a good example. I mean, you rent a car. If an onus happens, you know, or something completely out of something completely unexpected, they're still going to hold you responsible. But if they gave you a defective car, and as you're driving it around, the engine explodes, then yeah, they can't hold you responsible for that. Yeah.
And you expect that even less.
Right.
Than nice car.
Yeah. Okay.
Somehow.
So now for some cases on this topic of. Now for some cases on the topic of Mesa Machmas Malacha. Hahu gavred the shol nagra mechavre. A person once borrowed an axe from somebody else. It's bad, and the axe broke. And Rashi says it was actually he was Peshea. Also lechamed the Rava. So Rava was Peshea. He was careless. He didn't put it away properly. Whatever it was. Also lechamed the Rava. So. And came to Rava, Amalei, Zil Aisi Sadi Bilav Shonik Bey, this answers your question. Go bring Edim that you did not use it in an unusual way, and then you will be potter. Now the question is, Bileka Sadi Mai, what if there are no Edim, then what do we do? Toshma, let's bring another case. Dahu Gavr the Shol Nagame Chavre, a person borrowed an axe from somebody else, the Itbar, and it broke. also came to Rav, so they came, the Din Torah came to Rav, Amalei, and Rav told him, Zil Shalom Le'Nar Gamalia. It was broken by Pshia. Go pay him a new axe.
Apparently, without proving anything.
In other words, you don't have any. It sounds like you don't have any proof. So yeah.
So if you don't have any.
Well, okay. Omrulei Rav Kahana Rav Asi the Rav Dina Ochi. So Rav Kahana and Rav Asi asked Rav though, is that the din? Why should you have to pay him the value of a whole new axe? We learned way back in Bava Kama that a bialim metaplin minavela, that we said that if you, for example, you have somebody else, your ox gored somebody else's ox, or an ox fell into your bur or what have you, the nevela is given to the owner, and you pay the difference between the value of the nevela and the value of a live animal. By the same logic over here, we should say, let's say, a new axe is worth $100. Mm-hmm. The broken pieces of the old axe are worth, let's say, $10. Pay him 90. What are you telling him to pay a whole 100? Veshosik Rav, and Rav was quiet. He didn't have an answer to that. The Hilchasik Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi, and in fact, the halacha is like Rav Kahana and Rav Asi. D'mahadalei tabre. What he does is he returns him the broken pieces. Omamalei d'mei mana, and he returns, and then he fills up. He adds the remaining amount that's needed to pay for a new one. So in this case, he'd give him the broken pieces which are worth 10, and he'd pay him another $90. And now it's up to the owner of the axe to go find someone who can sell, who will buy the broken pieces of scrap metal for $10, and then he has $100 and he can go buy himself a new axe.
Why did you have to pay back give back, of course, the broken axe and pay the value of the new one when the owner gave him an old axe?
No, well, that's what we mean by nagamalia. We mean, in other words, the value of it at the time when you, we mean the value of it at the time when you borrow
it. So
it
doesn't have to bring the value of
it. No, it wouldn't be the value of a new one, per se. Right. So what we mean is the value of an axe that was,
a
working axe. Yeah, the value it was when, okay. Tosis has a bit of a long discussion over here. What about are we talking about? What happens if the value of the broken pieces goes down in between? What happens if it goes? We talked about that in Bava Kama also.
Yeah.
Mazel tov. Okay. All right. Well, not going to finish it not in 5 minutes, but we'll go a little further. Okay. Another case. Hahu gavur d'shol davla mechavrei. A person borrowed a bucket from somebody else to draw water. Itbar, and it broke. Also the Kamei D'Rapapa, so the case came to D'Rapapa. Dabla is a bucket, yeah. Also the Kamei D'Rapapa, Amalei Aisi Sadi D'Lashon Esvei, go bring Edim that you didn't use it any differently than normal. Ifter, and then you'll be Potter, similar to the case we said before about the axe. So it's the same basic idea. You need it,
Show us how you used it?
Show us how you used it, yeah. And if not, in other words, the point is, Mesa Machmas Malacha is such a rare situation, because again, normally, when you lend something, it normally is usable for its purposes, that normally, if it dies, we would more normally assume that it was Mesa based on Pshia, or just based on an onus or whatever, rather than assume that it was Mesa Machmas Malacha. You want to claim Mesa Machmas Malacha, you need proof that you didn't use it any differently than normal. Another case, Hahu gavur d'shol shunra mechavrei, a person once borrowed a cat from somebody else to catch mice. Chover alei achbrei v'katluhu. Shunra is a cat, yeah. Chover alei, that's the Aramaic word for a cat, I don't know, in modern Hebrew also, they have chatul is a cat, but they use the word shunar, like in English you have cat and you have puss, like puss in boots or whatever, they use the word shunar when they want to translate that, like a pussy cat. Yeah, now got it. That's right. V'alta shunra, yeah, and chad gadya, yeah, and chad gadya. V'alta shunra, v'alta gadya, yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so he borrowed. I have no idea. Anyway, yeah, it's from Iran. Okay, so he borrowed a cat from somebody else to catch mice. Chover alei achbrei v'katluhu. The mice ganged up on the cat and ended up killing it. Yosef Rav Ashi become a boyle. So Rav Ashi is sitting and asking and clearing on the question. Ki hai gavna mai? What is the din in this case? Ki mesa machmas malacha dami eloi. Is this considered a case of mesa machmas malacha where he would be potter or not? Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi. Hachi amal avimi mehagrunya meshmei derava. So Rav Mordechai tells him you should know that Rav Avimi mehagrunya said in the name of Rava. Gavra de noshi katluhu. If you have a man who was killed by women. He fell into their hands, and they ended up killing him. Lo dina v'lo dina. There's no din and there's no dayan. In other words, basically, what kind of a guy is that who allows himself to be overpowered by people weaker than him? In other words, the point is, therefore, yes, this is a case of Meis Machmas Malacha. The cat was obviously not a cat very worthy of the name if it could be overpowered by a bunch of mice, and therefore it's considered Meis Machmas Malacha.
Rats were maybe not mice.
No, that's if you look in Agoris Agro, he brings that's what the tour. That's how the tour understands. No, that because otherwise, what would it be? You're not going to say that he's chayev. And on what basis would he say that he's chayev? The cat was obviously a defective cat. That's
loy dina
means there's no din. But loy dina, there's no, you know, there's no dayan would even bother taking such a case because obviously. What? No, so we do say it's meisim achmas malacha. This is considered a case of meisim achmas malacha.
If he put it in a place
where there's an unusual number of mice, maybe. But if he put it in a normal place, and then if he put it in a normal place, and it happens the local mice happen to be smart enough, to whatever.
It'll make a great cartoon.
I suppose so.
You saw
okay.
Tom and Jerry.
No. Come on. Come on. Come on, Ikadamri, another version of the story that happened is Ochel Achbar Tubi V'Chavilumis. The other version of the story is it's not that the mice ganged up on the cat and killed it, it's rather the cat overate. It ate too many mice and then it got overheated and died. So now, again, according to this version, Yosef Rav Ashi v'Kamayim Bas, and now according to this version, Rav Ashi is sitting and wondering about that. Kehai Gavnamai, and again according to this version also, Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hachi Amavinim Hagrunya, Gavra the Noshi Katluhu. If a man was killed by women, not like the case before where like they went and chopped off his head, but rather he was killed by them by overindulging in women. Again, Loi Dina V'Loi Dina. There's no Din and there's no Dayan because again it was his fault. It's his fault for overindulging like that. Now it's interesting. Now for all the jokes and everything, it's interesting. In Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah brings only the first case of the year. The Ramah brings only the case where the mice ganged up on the cat. He doesn't bring the second case, which leads the Sneh and the Shach over there to discuss what the Sneh discusses over there. Does that mean that the Ramah would hold only the first case? We're saying it's considered Meis Machmas Malacha. Maybe the second one is not. Maybe it's considered an Oinus, or maybe not. Maybe Faker. Maybe the first case is the greater Chiddush. Maybe the first case is the greater Chiddush. The second one, it ate too many mice. Of course, that's classic Meis Machmas Malacha. The fact is, it was supposed to catch mice, and it did. It did the job too well. But in the first case, where it didn't even do that, where the mice ganged up on it, you would think, maybe it's not, like Lech Benzion was saying, and the Chiddush is that nevertheless, we would say that it is.
The Shach also brings over there a related thing that the Truma discusses a related thing that the Truma Sadeshin brings. That, for example, if you rented weapons to somebody else to defend the city, and then the enemies ended up capturing the city and killing the defenders and capturing the weapons, is it the same kind of thing? Maybe yes, because maybe it's Mesa Machmas Malacha. On the other hand, the Shach says maybe not. The weapons don't fight on their own. The cat fights on its own. So maybe there is a difference after all. Okay. Yeah. All right. Everyone. I think we'll go back.